What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are. And it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
Okay, Liz Wheeler Show, episode 446, take one. S.J. Small from Locals asks, what is your opinion on Steve Scalise, a squish or bona fide? Yes, my friends, we are going to do a question and answer episode today. You submitted your questions on Locals, you submitted your questions on Instagram, you submitted your questions on Twitter, and we have some really good questions. Questions about whether we're going to suffer a terror attack here in the United States in the wake of what has happened in Israel. Questions about the weirdest thing my toddler has ever eaten. Questions about the root of the word woke, which, you know, is one of my favorite topics to talk about. Someone asked why I'm wrong most of the time. So we are going to address that question, make no mistake. And of course, we were asked about the Andrew Tate red-pilled manosphere, and we will get to all of that and more. In addition, of course, to the politics of Iran that enabled Hamas and a couple of people who seem to be sympathizing with the Hamas terrorists. We are going to get to all of your questions. Let's start with our members on the Liz Wheeler Show community on Locals. This comes from SJ Small. He says, what's your opinion on Steve Scalise? Is he a squish or bona fide? Now, the reason that this question is important is because Steve Scalise has won the nomination to be the next Speaker of the House. So it's a really valid question. Is Steve Scalise better than Kevin McCarthy, who was the epitome of a rhino, a swamp creature? Is he more based? Is he more America first? Or is he just more of the same? I'm afraid to tell you, my friends, that he's a squish. He is close. Is he as bad as Kevin McCarthy? Well, almost. And when I say almost, let me read you his conservative review liberty score through 2022. So this is up to date. McCarthy's conservative review liberty score, which ranks members of Congress on how much or how well they adhere to conservative policies, McCarthy's score was a 54%. For anybody who doesn't remember from school, that's an F grade. That's a failure. Scalise's is a 58%. Also a failure, 4 points better than McCarthy. So I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of this. I know that Matt Gaetz has come out and said, listen, he's better than McCarthy. I think that's probably Matt Gaetz trying to save a little face for what he did. I still think that Matt Gaetz did the right thing because sometimes you have to do something just based on the principle of the thing. Even if there is not a well-constructed plan for what you're going to do next, sometimes you just have to do the right thing and figure out what to do next. So I don't hold this against Matt Gaetz. I do think that the people who have already said, the members of Congress who have said they won't vote for Steve Scalise are pretty telling about Steve Scalise's record. Chip Roy and Thomas Massie said they're no votes. Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Congress members Miller, Luna, Jimenez, Cloud, and Nels all say they're voting no. So that's some of the good conservatives in Congress who are saying no. Scalise has also raved about Zelensky inspiring Congress and inspiring the world. And just yesterday, he was walking around Congress in a mask, an N95 mask. I find that a little bit of a turnoff. So in other words, I think he's a squish. I don't think it's a good thing. It's frustrating that members of Congress don't listen to their base, even when Matt Gaetz gave them the opportunity to pick a more based conservative. They didn't. So let's go on to the next question. CJ from Locals. Oh, this is a good one. It says, hi, Liz. Hi, CJ. I've heard you say that you're opposed to the death penalty. However, do you think there are any instances where the death penalty is warranted? For example, do you think that people who rape, molest, or murder children should get the death penalty if there is solid evidence that they are guilty? Obviously, sentencing someone to death is a very delicate situation. So we never know for sure if the person is guilty. But let's say someone commits an atrocious crime like child rape, child murder, etc. And let's say they confess to it. Should they get the death penalty? Well, my position on the death penalty is not because I don't think that the death penalty is justified for the most heinous crimes that are committed in our country. I'm not soft on crime. I'm not soft on sentencing or punishment. But I do think it is a risk that I'm not willing to take when we give the government the power to take lives away from citizens. It's one thing if a citizen has violated their social contract with society. They've raped someone, murdered someone, they've harmed someone else, and you have to incarcerate them to protect the rest of society. But do I trust that the government will not abuse their power to kill their own citizens? The answer to that is no. And I don't say this because I don't have faith in our justice system. I do. I say this because there have been so many cases of people who have been convicted of horrible, heinous crimes and then executed for those crimes who later were exonerated for those crimes. Because you're exactly right. Our justice system is the best justice system in the world, but it's not perfect. It's not perfect. And to take someone's life away from them by killing them, by executing them, I am not willing to allow that kind of policy from our government when there have been so many errors in the application of this. It's unforgivable. There shouldn't be even one error in the application of this if we are to consider our criminal justice system just. So I don't think it's a matter of what the crime committed is. We are able to put these people away. We are able to incarcerate them and isolate them from society. It's actually more expensive to put them to death because of the appeals process than it is to incarcerate them for life. So there are a lot of arguments against the death penalty. I know it's a more liberal liberal stance usually to be against the death penalty, but that's not for the reasons the left is against the death penalty are not the reasons that I am. I simply don't trust the government not to make mistakes because they have made so many mistakes in the past, and that's unforgivable. I know I get a lot of flack for this opinion, and it is an opinion that I've changed on, meaning I used to be more of a proponent of the death penalty because I believe in justice. I believe even from a biblical worldview and a Christian worldview, which is how I view the world, that it can be justified. But to have flawed people in our government, the ones who are applying that, and to have evidence that they've made so many mistakes is something that I'm not willing to sign off on. Okay. The next question is a question that is on a lot of people's minds. This is trending online all over the United States of America. And it's about whether we are going to face a terror attack here in the United States and the evidence that shows that we might. We're going to talk about that in just a second.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day, and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast. Politics by Faith.
The media has systematically lied to you. The Hunter Biden laptop story, the origin of COVID-19, the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, or how your money's being spent in Ukraine. Enough already with the lies. No more lies, hard truths only. That's what the Truth Podcast is all about. It's not standard conservative talking points. If you want that, go somewhere else. But if you want the hard truth delivered to you in a way that challenges you and will challenge me intellectually, you're not going to find anything like this on the internet. Subscribe, download now, The Truth.
Okay, the next question is from Danimal3366 on Locals. Danimal says, with all of the illegals the Biden administration has allowed into our country, are you as concerned as some of us that there will soon be terrorist uprisings resulting in attacks or actions in our big cities around the country? Please give your thoughts on the matter. I have two answers to this, Danimal. The first one, let me bring up the statistic. We talked about this on the show earlier in the week, and I think I still have this statistic pulled up. Let me grab this. So the U.S. southern border is not secured right now. We know this. There's been, up until now, I believe over 150 people who have been apprehended by Border Patrol crossing our border who are suspects on the FBI's terror watch list. That's just through October of this year, just in the space of this 10 months. And those are only the people that Border Patrol has apprehended. Those are not the people who have gotten away, who have successfully crossed the border, evading our law enforcement. That should startle us all. Those are active suspects on the terror watch list. But in addition to that, there are, and this is reporting from Bill Malusian, that in the last 2 years, special interest aliens, so the designation special interest alien means that they are individuals from countries that are known to sponsor and export terrorism. This is how many of these special interest aliens have come from Middle Eastern countries into the United States. These are the ones that have been apprehended. Again, not even the ones that have gotten away. From Syria, 538. From Yemen, 139. From Iran, 659. From Iraq, 123. From Afghanistan, 6,386. From Lebanon, 164. From Egypt, 3,153. From Pakistan, 1,613. From Uzbekistan, 13,624. And from Turkey, 30,830. So the first question is, am I worried that there is a vulnerability because our southern border is open, a vulnerability to terrorists crossing our border? Of course not. The numbers show it, but the numbers are only a tiny little fraction of the picture because they're a tiny fraction of who comes across the border. Yes, our enemies would be stupid not to infiltrate our country by coming across the southern border. And we all know this. It's one of the reasons why I found it so incredibly annoying when Joe Biden made his speech about Israel this week and talked about how much he supports Israel and he's going to stand by them and give them everything he needs, and how so many conservatives came out and said, oh, it's so nice that Joe Biden for once is on the right side of history saying these things. Well, no, he's not. He doesn't. He might be saying those words, but the words are empty because all of his policies have A, enabled Iran to fund Hamas to attack Israel, and his southern border policies are putting us at risk. The leaders of Hamas just this week have called for a, quote, day of rage, not just in Israel, but all around the world, including in the United States of America, a day of rage. By when they say that phrase, day of rage, they're not talking about peaceful protests. They're talking about terror attacks inflicted on us on Friday, tomorrow. So yeah, we're vulnerable to a terror attack. Of course we are. And the reason for that isn't just that evil ideologies exist. Evil ideologies have always existed and will always exist. There's no way to eradicate evil. You just mitigate it and protect yourself from it. And the Joe Biden administration is not doing their due diligence on that. So yes, we are vulnerable. Okay, over on Twitter, this is a parenting question. Virtus on Twitter says, what's the weirdest thing your kid has ever eaten? My oldest ate a cricket at 18 months old, a live one. I don't even know how he caught it, but crunch. Some of my mom friends would laugh their heads off if their kids did that because it's funny. I would not be that mom. I would definitely be grossed out. I'm trying to think if she's eaten anything odd. She has never been a kid who, she's 2.5 now, by the way. She's never been a kid that put a lot of things in her mouth. Even when she was like between 6 months and 18 months, sort of that prime, oh, you find a crumb on the floor and you put it in your mouth phase. She never really did that. She never was really one to chew on a lot of toys or to like slobber all over things. So I'm trying to even think what is the weirdest thing she's eaten. Her favorite thing to eat is roasted asparagus, which is funny for a 2.5-year-old. I'll put asparagus on a platter in the oven, put like salt and pepper on it, and she'll just like eat them down like a little rabbit. I don't know if that counts. I can't remember her ever eating bugs though. Okay, this next question, is about 2024 election. This is a good question. This is a really good question. We're going to get to that in just a second. Okay, Les Friend on Twitter says, if you were strategizing for the GOP in 2024, what issues would you most concentrate on and which states would you direct the greatest amount of campaigning and resources to? So let's start with the first half of this. This is a fantastic question. This is the question every Republican elected official should be able to answer, the RNC should be able to articulate, and they should repeat it so often that we should all know it by heart. So let's start with the first half of this. What issues would you most concentrate on and which states would you direct the greatest amount of campaign resources to? The first thing that I would focus on is Hunter Biden's corruption. Why? Not even because it is so extensive. It is, the like of which we've never seen associated with the Oval Office, because Joe Biden, of course, profited from and was associated with Hunter's collecting money from all of these terrible people around the earth to get access to Joe Biden, first as vice president, then as president. This is an issue that crosses party lines. I will never stop talking about that poll that showed that a percentage of Democrats in 2020 would not have cast their vote for Joe Biden had they known about Hunter Biden's laptop or had they realized it was true. And remember, those two things are critical. Had they known, Big Tech was stifling that story. We weren't even allowed to send it as a DM on Twitter. You weren't allowed to tweet about it. You weren't allowed to post it on Facebook. They absolutely stifled that story so that people didn't hear about it. And then once people did start to pass it along through undercover, underground channels, they immediately had all these intel officials, all these leftist intel officials sign a letter saying, no, this is Russian propaganda. Don't listen to this. This is an intelligence operation from Vladimir Putin. And a lot of people didn't know if it was true or not. But the number of Democrats who said, had we known about this and had we known it was true, would have changed the outcome of that election, which tells me that Hunter Biden is a winning issue for recruiting Democrats across the aisle. There aren't that many issues where you can convince a hardcore Democrat or just a Democrat who's been voting for Democrats for maybe the history of their adult life. There's not that many issues that cross party lines. Hunter Biden is one of them. The other thing I would focus on is Ukraine. This also, I know there are more Democrats that support sending money to Ukraine, but a lot of Americans, especially working class Americans, are infuriated that we are sending billions and trillions of dollars to Ukraine when we need that money to be focused here in the United States. We need to stop printing money, stop spending money so that we stop the inflation that's hurting us all so that we can afford gas and groceries and just the cost of living so that when our paychecks increase, it actually means something instead of feeling like it shrinks because the wage increases are being outpaced by inflation. Ukraine, Republicans should hammer Ukraine. And then the third issue that I would focus on is COVID. It's COVID. The COVID abuses, the infringements, the anti-science, the corruption of big pharma, the imposition of masks and vaccines and lockdowns. People feel this so viscerally still. And there hasn't been any accountability. The Republicans could take advantage of this, and they would do so well in these elections if they would just be savage and base on Hunter, Ukraine, and COVID. That's it. Hunter, Ukraine, and COVID. But of course, they won't, because they never do. They never do. Which states would you direct the greatest amount of campaigning and resources to? I just did a whole episode, and I highly recommend that you go watch this, let me find the title of this episode. It was with Scott Pressler, who is a fascinating individual. He is on the ground doing what the RNC should be doing, but is not. And Scott Pressler is focused on the states that can be won for Republicans, but they're swing states. So like Pennsylvania is an example. I think he's in Pennsylvania right now. And he, during this episode, talked about exactly what strategy in each of these swing states will actually change the election. So Pennsylvania is one, Wisconsin is one, Arizona, of course, is one. I'm looking to see where he says he's going next. Regardless, just go back and read and watch that episode. I think the title of the episode is "This Man Is Single-Handedly Winning the Election for Republicans in 2024. And it was a really fascinating conversation. And there's stuff that you and I can be doing to help. He shouldn't be doing this single-handedly. It should be something the RNC is behind. But if they're not, it doesn't mean that we should abandon this strategy. I'll give you an example of one of the things that he told me. So in Pennsylvania, there are about 80,000 Amish that live in Pennsylvania. And a lot of them don't vote. Yet Amish are committed to religious freedom, to medical freedom, to not having government tell them what to do, infringe upon their rights, on parental rights particularly. And if you can actively recruit a good percentage of the Amish adults in that community to vote, you could potentially swing Pennsylvania. The same in Wisconsin. There are truck drivers and hunters in Wisconsin whose percentage of or the percentage of them who are registered to vote is like shockingly low. Yet they're truck drivers and hunters. They're probably Republicans. Republicans should be reaching out specifically to recruit them to vote. And that is what Scott Pressler is doing. Okay, my team is telling me this episode 441. It's last Friday's episode for anybody who wants to watch it. Okay, should Israel flatten Gaza? If yes, why? If no, why? That is a good question, which we will get to in just a second. Okay, Aaron says, do you think Israel should flatten Gaza? If yes, why? If no, why? Let me answer this by saying what I think Israel should do. I think Israel should hunt down and terminate every single member of Hamas, whether they be in Gaza, whether they be in Iran, whether they be in Qatar, whether they be in the United States or anywhere around the world. It is far past time for Israel to stop negotiating with terrorists. And this is the historical context of this situation should also tell you just how good faith Israel is and just how bad faith the Palestinian Authority and Hamas are. The Palestinian Authority and Hamas have never been interested in a two-state solution. Back 70 years ago, the United Nations divided up land and said, this is the state of Israel, this is territory for the Palestinians. The Israelis accepted that, even though it's a really tiny little bit of land. The Palestinian Authority, the Palestinians, rejected that. In just within the last two decades, Israel has unilaterally pulled out of Gaza. They relinquished that to the Palestinians. But it was never a land dispute. They disguise it as a land dispute. The founding charter of Hamas says they want to eradicate Israel. They are a death cult. They want to die if that means that they can kill Jews in Israel. Enough is enough. Israel is so conscientious about warning the civilians in Gaza to evacuate, to get out of there, warning them before they bomb. And you know why they have to warn civilians? Because Hamas is so evil that they hide rockets and bombs and tunnels in hospitals and schools, in neighborhoods, so that they can use civilians as human shields. That's why when we saw that video of that mosque being blown up and all these leftists were like, oh my goodness, Israel bombing a mosque. They have no respect. They're not bombing military targets. They're bombing houses of worship. It's like, no, there were secondary explosions after Israel dropped those bombs on the mosque because underneath that mosque, Hamas was hiding rockets. It was a military installation. When Israel warned the civilians in Gaza to evacuate within 48 hours because Israel would be bombing Gaza, the Hamas and Palestinian Authority told the civilians not to leave. Do you know why? Because Hamas and the Palestinian Authority don't care about civilians. They are using Palestinians. They are willing to sacrifice human life of their own people if it means that they can get good PR after Israel bombs Gaza and a civilian dies. Israel should do whatever it takes for however long it takes to eradicate Hamas and the leadership of Hamas who's hiding out in Qatar. So I don't know if I'm going to answer the question yes or no. Should they flatten Gaza? Should they flatten Hamas? Oh, yeah. All right. Red Pillaging on Twitter says, oh, this is a good question. This is one of my favorite topics. Thank you for asking this. Are the roots of the word woke from Marxism or liberalism? Okay, so first let's talk about classical liberalism, if you will, Enlightenment liberalism. Enlightenment liberalism never worked. This idea, this sort of libertarian idea that you don't have to govern with any morals has failed. We can see that in our own country because look at the cultural madness that we're existing in. The Republican Party has embraced this idea of Enlightenment liberalism and it just doesn't work. You have to, in a society, you have to have bedrock principles and you have to educate your citizens on those bedrock principles. And yes, sometimes it's the government's role to do that, especially when it comes to children, especially in the public school system. The origin of the word woke is traced, and I trace this back in my book. We can go to BCAM to see a nice shot of it. If you haven't gotten it, go ahead, go get your book, hide your children. The origin of the word woke is traced back to Paulo Freire. Paulo Freire was a Brazilian Marxist who suggested that teachers shouldn't teach children facts and knowledge because Marxists don't believe in objective truth or reality. So he said, well, what teachers are teaching students is just the prevailing political narrative. So it's essentially like oppressors indoctrinating children in what they believe. He said, instead of that, teachers should teach children a worldview, how to think, how to view the world. And this worldview, Paulo Freire called, he wanted to awaken the children's critical consciousness. Well, what's critical consciousness? Critical consciousness is viewing the world through a lens of Marxism, labeling every person or every demographic as either oppressed or oppressors to agitate the two against each other in hopes of a Marxist revolution. This critical consciousness, that's wokeness. It's under a different name because the Marxists of today, the modern Marxists in America, try to hide it because they don't want people to recognize it. But the roots of wokeism are Marxist. But what has allowed wokeism to become so rooted in our society is Enlightenment liberalism that does not fight for a moral order because they just want to be able to do whatever they want. They think liberty equals license versus liberty allowing us to achieve virtue. I talk about this more in my book. You should get it. Okay, Jason Clark from Twitter says, will you retract your unfortunate claim about babies being beheaded by people from Palestine? By people from Palestine? Dude, what is your problem? They're terrorists. By people from Palestine? Are you out of your freaking mind? Terrorists from Hamas murdered babies and the babies were decapitated. And I know that there were people on Twitter being like, oh, we haven't seen video. How do we know proof of this? Well, have you seen video of Abraham Lincoln being assassinated? No, I don't think so. And yet, oh, you believe that? Even CNN has confirmed that the Israeli prime minister has confirmed that toddlers and babies have been decapitated and beheaded by Hamas terrorists. The evil is so unspeakable. I do not understand, actually. This is one of the most shocking things for me this week. I did not understand how deeply embedded into the leftist mindset in our country, in the United States, anti-Semitism is. Like, you're denying these atrocities. Would you have denied the Holocaust too? Because what's happening in Israel is what happened during the Holocaust. It's what happened, what ISIS did. Why are you denying it? Because you have political differences with the government of Israel? Listen, there can be good faith differences on what you think Israeli government policies should be. There can be good faith discussions on what you think the role of the United States should be in a conflict between Hamas and Israel. That's fine. You can be an isolationist and say, well, I don't think U.S. should be involved. Or you can say, yeah, this is different. The U.S. shouldn't stand by. It's different than Ukraine and Russia. And we should give Israel aid so that they are not wiped from the face of the earth. You can have that discussion. Go ahead. You can have a discussion about whether you think Israel should retaliate against Hamas with overwhelming force or whether you think that they should do targeted assassinations of just the terrorists. You can have a good faith discussion about that. But this is the part I don't get. How can you, any person, look at what Hamas has done to Israeli civilians, raping women and dragging them through the streets, killing elderly people in their own home and uploading that video on Facebook for their families to see, kidnapping babies, taking them to Gaza, burning Israelis alive in their cars, decapitating toddlers and babies? How can you look at that in any context? What context could ever make that appropriate? There is none. So no, I will not retract my accurate reporting of what Hamas has done to Israel, because it seems to me that the more people who are denying it the way you're denying it, the louder and more often people like me have to say it. Our next question, this is actually a funny one. A little switch of energy here from an intense question to a not so intense question is from Sean Conway, who says, why are you wrong most of the time? Good question, Sean. Let me answer your question by asking you a question. What have I been wrong about? Detail it. Give me the timestamp on every episode, the sentence that I said that is incorrect, the fact that I have offered that is inaccurate, the report that I have made that turned out not to be true. Tell me, if I got something wrong, I'd be happy to retract it, but I suspect that you can't give me a single example, but I'll sit here and wait until you offer them. All right, Carl Hunt says, who's really in charge of the Democrats? They always seem to follow the leader as if they don't have an opinion. Yeah, this is a good question. Like, who's controlling Biden? I suspect it's Barack Obama. I suspect that Barack Obama is essentially the shadow president in his fake third term. It seems to me that the ideology coming from the Biden administration is in alignment with Barack Obama. Aria from Instagram says, talk about the Islamic regime and Iran's asset in the Pentagon. You know what? I was hoping that we would get a chance to talk about this all week. I intended to bring this up and then different stories kept taking precedent and we never got to it. So maybe we'll do a longer piece on this next week. But it is really interesting how the Iranian regime infiltrated the Department of Defense right here in the United States. And we didn't even hear about this, by the way. I'll post this article on Locals and on Twitter. I think I already posted it on Twitter, but I'll post it again. It's from Tablet Magazine, talking about how a Biden administration official essentially helped put an Iranian spy ring in positions of power in the Biden administration. And these Iranian spies, all their emails, all their contacts, all their behavior shows that they're being controlled by the Iranian regime, and they're impacting Joe Biden's policy. It's totally shocking. I'll post the article, because you guys, it's complicated. It's convoluted, as spy rings always are, but it's like reading a spy thriller. It's fascinating, but it's also shocking that this happened in the United States government. So I'll post the link to that. Connor on Instagram says, thoughts on the passport bro movement. So the passport bro movement, as I understand it, is something or a suggestion that is being offered by the manosphere. So like the Andrew Tate types, or like the girl version would be like the Pearl Davis types, who basically say that Western women are trash, and that if you want a trad wife, you have to go to a non-Western nation where women are still women. And you know my thoughts on the manosphere in general. I think the manosphere, and this is not just true of Andrew Tate, this is true of a lot of the manosphere podcasts, like Fresh and Fit and the Whatever podcast, those types of influencers that typically aren't religious, but are sort of blindly grasping towards tradition. And they just like, they usually like, because they're blindly grasping, they just kind of miss it. And their suggestion for how to solve very real problems is wrong. So in this case, there is a problem with feminism tainting American culture, right? A lot of women have fallen prey to what the feminist movement has told us, which is that being a woman makes you inferior than a man, that men will always try to oppress you, that you can't actually compete with men unless you have special treatment by the government, that you shouldn't want to be a wife and a mother, that that is demeaning to you, that you should only find your fulfillment through a paycheck. And this feminist narrative has infiltrated our society pretty significantly for multiple generations. And it's impacted marriages. It's impacted how women view marriage, whether they want to be involved in a marriage. I mean, women are more promiscuous now because the feminist movement has told women that to really be liberated, that you have to be sexually promiscuous. So I understand the problem that the manosphere has identified it's not with marriage, but it's with how our culture views marriage in general. But as usual, their prescription for this problem is not the prescription that I would offer. Their prescription is that men should go to foreign countries. And essentially, it's essentially the reverse of a mail order bride. It's essentially, why don't you abandon a Western country and go to some non-Western country where women are more quote unquote traditional? I don't really think that's the answer. I think men should be fighting our culture here in the United States. If you think there's a problem with our culture, don't just abandon it. Do something to change it. I don't think that the manosphere has the tools to change it, because I look at the world through a quick Christian worldview. They don't. And I don't think a lot of these problems are solved without a Christian worldview. But I would suggest that you go to church and become more religious and embrace traditional values for the reason that these values are valuable, not just because they're practical solutions, but because they have meaning. The differences between man and woman has meaning. The differences between not being married and married has a meaning. The reason you don't divorce has meaning, not just practically, but spiritually. And until we address those things, I don't know that our culture is going to change, but that's the way to really solve this problem, not to abandon the West and become a passport bro. Baraz from Instagram, this is the final question, says, why are you being so hypocritical about the Palestine case? I almost don't even understand this question. Hypocritical in what sense? That I believe that Israel has a right to exist? That I believe that Jews are human beings? That I believe that Israel has the right to eradicate Hamas? That I think terrorism is evil? Exactly where am I being hypocritical? Are you talking about because I think that in some cases war can be justified, meaning that Israel has a responsibility to eradicate Hamas and do that militarily, whereas I don't think that the United States should be emptying our coffers, taxpayer money, and printing money and sending it to Ukraine? I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about when you're talking about hypocrisy here. One of the things that is problematic among conservatives, and I have no idea if you're conservative or not, but in response to the forever wars that we saw during the Bush administration, and then obviously they continued on in the Obama administration, one of the problems was almost an overcompensation. Conservatives said, well, I don't want that. We don't want to stay in wars and spend all this money forever. And so instead of just saying, okay, well, let's retool and reorient our foreign policy philosophy as a Republican Party, let's make it more of an America First philosophy, some people overcompensated and became isolationists and said, we shouldn't be involved in any war. We should only be focused on what happens here. Any atrocity around the world, that's just not our business. We can have opinions about it. We can empathize with the victims, but we just shouldn't get involved. That's not properly ordered foreign policy either. There are times when war, as tragic and atrocious as it is justified. It is necessary to ultimately protect human lives and human dignity. And so I don't know if you're talking about Russia invading Ukraine and me not wanting to give more money to Zelensky, but me being okay with the United States helping Israel. I don't think Israel really needs our help, except for satellite images and intelligence and certain types of weapons. I don't think that we're going to send American boots on the ground. It's not going to become us fighting that war. Israel can take care of themselves. There's no problem with us helping to make it as quick and as effective as possible. Because that's the other thing. Israel doesn't want to engage in a forever war. They want to have this military action done as quickly as possible and as effectively as possible. So I'm not exactly sure what you mean when you say hypocritical, except that it seems that you might be falling for the propaganda coming from the left that Israel is bad and what Hamas did to the civilians in Israel is somehow justified. And if that's your take, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth and I don't want to do that. But if that's your take, that's a terrible take. I just don't understand people this week who can view what's happening in Israel and think that there's any justification for it. Even if you hypothetically don't even like, even if you don't like Jews, right? Even if you have a bad, poisonous, anti-Semitic ideology, even if you don't think that it's fair that Israel has that land, even if you are standing in solidarity with the Palestinian people, even if you think that Israel has colonized, even if you believe that it's an open-air prison, all these different stupid leftist narratives, even if you believe all of that, are you telling me that you think it's morally justified to rape women because of that and to kill babies? Because I don't know what kind of worldview that is, except an evil worldview. But it's shocking how many people in our country have articulated this in the past couple of weeks, and I hope and I pray that it changes because it's bad stuff. All right, guys, I hate to end it. I wish I had actually a lighter question to end on because that's such a... Let me see if there's any more. Let me refresh. Hold on. Let's see if we can end it on a little bit of a lighter note. Okay, so last question, a little bit lighter, I guess. I'll leave you to decide that, is from Rev Ritchie on Locals, who said, why hasn't Congress used the 25th Amendment to get Biden out? There's certainly enough data to remove him. Or maybe it's the man behind the curtain preventing that from happening. So the 25th Amendment is an amendment intended to allow Congress and the cabinet secretaries to remove a president if that president is mentally unfit for office. And I think you could make a valid argument that Joe Biden is mentally unfit for office. I'm not a huge fan of using this as a tactic because I don't think that who's the one to determine if Biden is mentally unfit, right? It should be the voters. It shouldn't be some unilateral panel of even our elected officials. I mean, cabinet secretaries are confirmed, but they're not elected. I don't love the idea of even having competency tests and mental tests because the people running the mental tests could easily be biased. And especially in mental health care today, I mean, they're telling little girls they can be boys and boys they can be girls and parents that they're evil if they don't transition their kids. These people I don't trust to do an accurate analysis. I do think the Congress should impeach Biden. I think Biden has profited by selling access to himself when he was vice president and now through Hunter Biden serving as his bag man. And I think that's harmed the United States. I think that that is a high crime and misdemeanor. I think we have plenty of proof of that in text messages and emails and on Hunter Biden's laptop. I would impeach Biden. I know that there's some conservatives who are wary of impeaching Biden because they're like, oh, what are you going to get? Kamala Harris? Well, this is one of those situations that sometimes you do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And you deal with the next stage, the consequences of what is caused by doing the right thing next. And I feel that that is this situation. It is the right thing to do to impeach Biden. And you don't not do the right thing just because the outcome of it is not the installation of a Republican, that it's Kamala Harris who is next in line. Kamala Harris is incredibly unpopular. She would not win re-election anyway, even if Biden was impeached and she was installed as president, she would not win a general election. She couldn't even win a Democratic primary. So I don't quite buy into the argument that we shouldn't do it because it'll just make Kamala Harris the president. It's the right thing to do. Impeach the man. He has sold access to our country, and it's very dangerous, and it's very, very wrong. If we allow him to get away with this, other presidents are going to do the same thing. They're going to be emboldened and empowered because no one was ever held to account. All right. I really enjoyed this episode. Thank you for your questions. This was fun. We'll have to do it again. You can always join the Liz Wheeler Show community on Locals. That's lizwheeler.com/locals to submit your questions for the next time. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating. I'm Liz Wheeler. This is the Liz Wheeler Show.